Hello there, and welcome to Pivotal Film. I am Tom Nolan.
I'm Mario Ponzio.
And I'm Andy Berry.
And we are recording remotely today.
Tom and I are here in the Pivotal Film Towers.
Andy's over there in what the hell's his name?
The governor of Illinois.
I want to say Jim Jarmusch.
Rob Blagojevich.
Pritchner, yeah.
It's not Rob Blagojevich anymore?
God, no.
Unfortunately.
Damn it.
I'm also going to hide you, Tom, because you're just right there.
Oh, I can't hide you. Son of a bitch.
Sorry.
Just don't look at me.
So we are.
One day.
After the Oscars.
So I guess we should start with our
Oscar reactions.
Oscar reactions.
Yeah, we don't have to spend too much time on this, right? We were texting each other during the thing. I had said that it went mostly chalk.
Not completely chalk,
but in all the awards that mattered, not mattered, but like all the above the line awards, it was very chalky.
Well, Emma Stone was, like Andy just said.
But is that like a surprise?
No, it was the right call. It just wasn't.
That's not the question we're asking, Andy. That's not the question. I was not surprised. I was disappointed Lily Gladstone didn't win, but I wasn't like surprised Emma Stone won. I just assumed if this statement makes any sense, I assumed one of them was going to win. You know what I mean?
Well, I would agree. So all of our, Andy, I assume this was the same movie. I mean, we had an Oscar pool, which Andy won.
I won.
Congratulations.
19 out of 23.
That's pretty good.
I got 17 out of 23. But all of the ones I missed, my second pick won. So I don't know if that was the same with you, Andy. There was no major ups.
I mean, me picking sound was the whole reason why I won. Because only one other person picked Zone of Interest to win that one. And that was kind of a surprise. I'm happy that happened too.
Yeah, that was exciting. It kind of like legitimized it as not being just like the international feature winner, but like it's a part of the conversation. I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't here when you guys reviewed it, but yeah, I did like it more than Mario. So
I loved it.
I thought it was pretty great. And the more I get away from it, the more I'm liking it. The more I think about it, the further away it gets from it.
But I thought it was a great show. I thought it was fun. It was way more fun than it normally is.
I thought it was only 203 minutes too. That was awesome.
Which is a good 10 minutes than it's usually, like less than it usually is. So yeah. that was nice. Got to see John Cena almost naked. It was a very WWE heavy Oscars. You had John Cena, The Rock, Bad Bunny.
That's three. Emma Stone.
Bad Bunny a wrestler?
Yeah. Bad Bunny is a wrestler.
Okay. I just know him from music.
I don't even know him. I just know him from being Bad Bunny.
Fair enough.
Sing me one of his songs, Andy.
Oh, I could not do that.
Yeah. You know Spanish.
I thought that was a very curious choice for best international feature. The Rock and Bad Bunny.
Yeah.
And like these very serious movies, and it's just these two very non-serious people.
The one thing I will criticize, I really never want them to do the acting thing they did.
That was annoying as hell.
They had five previous winners all introduce the nominees, and that's not necessary.
I really liked it, except for I really liked it when it was sincere.
Yeah,
and then that only happened like three or four times, and then all the other ones, I was like, I don't care. I don't need to hear Ben Kingsley compliment
Sam Rockwell.
No, Sam Rockwell did compliment.
Yeah.
I forget who he did, like which best actor he had, but I was like, that's
Jeffrey Wright.
Jeffrey Wright. Yeah, I was like, that's cool. They have no relationship to each other, so he's just like reading from a script, being Jeffrey Wright. You are good.
Yeah.
Tim Robbins is Nick Cage was funny.
Yeah.
Nick Cage was great. Sam Rockwell was great too.
Tim Robbins is tall.
Tim Robbins is super tall, yeah.
He looks rough. Oh boy.
Yeah.
He's like 60s, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, compared to like Ben Kingsley, who's in his 80s.
Yeah. I was just happy that they didn't drag Jane Fonda out again for one of these things, because they always drag Jane Fonda out for these types of things.
They should have brought out Alec Baldwin.
Oh, he didn't win anything.
Just for during the best stunts thing.
This sounds funny. Why am I laughing? It's not funny at all. But I mean, it was a good. I think the really interesting thing, and I made this comment on. This will be the last thing I have to say about like, you know, the Oppenheimer Oscars or whatever, is that Oppenheimer won all the awards. Christopher Nolan gets all his shit. Robert Downey Jr. gets to be a putz for like the next however many years. But Barbie still owns the culture. Like, it's not taking that away from Barbie. Like, the best moment of the night belonged to Barbie.
Ryan Gosling.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, there's kids dressing up like Barbie for Halloween. Like I said, there's one of my daughter's best friends did the Billie Eilish song at the talent show. It's a part of the universe. And Oppenheimer is just a really good movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Godzilla Minus One winning was the best moment.
That was really great.
It would have been a better moment if they had just brought a translator. Or not even brought a fucking translator and just gave it in Japanese.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, and give him all the time he wanted. They were starting to play him off. That was bullshit.
Yeah, that was garbage.
I did love Miyazaki not even being there. He's like, fuck this shit. I don't care.
And Wes Anderson not giving a fuck.
Oh, Wes Anderson. Like I said to you, Wes Anderson's mad.
Yeah, probably.
That's his Oscar.
Yeah, fuck that guy. That's so shitty.
It's so funny, though. He would probably
rather say, fuck that guy, but not fuck Alec Baldwin. Well, it's like, fuck the guy who made a movie we didn't like.
The legal system is going to fuck Alec Baldwin. He doesn't need us to fuck him.
That's true.
All right, so what are we going to do first?
I guess we'll start with Occupied City.
In May 1940, Amsterdam was taken over by the Germans. Immediately, they set the clock forward. So it was the same time in Amsterdam as in Berlin. The weather report disappeared from the newspapers. It was now a military secret. All streetlights were turned off. Dutch organizations were Nazified or forbidden. Soon, the Nazis started to ban Jews from parks, pools, shops, cafes, and schools, from all public life. Music by Jewish composers could no longer be played. In 1941, they started rounding people up. In 1942, the deportations began.
About World War II, the occupation in Amsterdam. Tom, you did not see this.
I desperately want to. I just don't have time in my waking life for this movie. And every time I go, I've been falling asleep really early because I've been sick and stuff like that. So it's just been a weird time for me. Yeah. So I'm sorry. I will get to it though.
Sorry, your diverticulitis.
Diverticulitis. Whatever. Sucks.
You and Brock Lesnar. That's the only similarities you can share.
And apparently a lot of other people. There were multiple people in the hospital the same day as me with diverticulitis.
Oh, that's
crazy. There was a lot of stomach stuff going on, so.
Yeah.
Occupied City. I fucking adored this.
I loved it. It's definitely something where you have to get the mindset for it. And it feels
almost like an art installation. It kind of feels like one of those movies that would play at the MoMA in a constant loop.
Watch it for 10 minutes,
get a feeling for it, and move on.
That's kind of how I watched it. So
I couldn't sit there and watch it
straight through. But I like the vibes of it. It looked beautiful, but I I fell asleep during some of it. I woke up, it was still going. I enjoyed it, and then, you know,
it's half of a regular night of sleep. Yeah. So.
It's pretty chill. Like, I watched it, like, kind of hungover on a Saturday morning. It was kind of good for that. So,
chill is an interesting word.
So, how does it function? Because I did watch, I think I watched the first two sequences. So, it's so like
his wife, Steve McQueen's wife, wrote a documentary about, or wrote a novel, not novel, but a nonfiction work about the occupation of Anserin. It's basically lifting from that. Showing scenes of where these things took place in history.
And somebody's
doing a voiceover. I don't remember who's doing it. What happened during the occupation. So you might look at what's a CBS now and be like, five guys were lined up and then taken away and killed in the camps.
And do they provide that context? Or do they show an area like of what it looked like in 1940, whatever.
No, they don't. So they just show
the CVS.
No, it's just showed now. Yeah. And what's interesting is they kind of do. I don't know, Andy, if you agree with this, but there's like this bit of a simile or connection between some of the things that are going on during COVID.
Some of the COVID protests.
During lockdown. The COVID protests, there was. It looks like there was some anti-Muslim protests.
Yeah.
And they kind of connect that to the Jewish hatred Queen does. So I found that part very interesting.
It was interesting. It felt like a kind of a stretch on some of that stuff, but
yeah, I agree.
But I know what he was going for, and it ultimately works. It doesn't need to be this long. And I know there's a 36-hour version of it, which is wild.
What?
Yeah, there is.
And that's something that I agree with. Like I said earlier, it's something that should be in a museum. Yeah.
You look at it, it's not a movie.
And
then you move on.
No, I would agree.
It's an art piece. But
I was memorized by it.
The voiceover was really calming. Though, and that's what I meant. Like the vibe. Like I don't know who narrated it. But it was really. I don't know. I like.
English actress.
Yeah.
But I guess ultimately, if you enjoy this, you're going to enjoy the book. Because it's just the book.
Did the book come out already, or is it coming out, or is it in conjunction with?
I'm fairly certain it came out in like 2019.
The score for it is Melanie Himes, who does the narration.
I'm not sure when the book came out. I can't find it.
Whatever.
It's unimportant. I was just wondering if it was like this, where, because remember we were kind of anticipating this for a while and it just like wasn't coming out, and then they just, it got like a small release and then they dumped it onto.
Just dumped it, which is weird for A24 to do.
Yeah.
A24 is starting to do that now.
Yeah. The book is 2019.
2019, okay. Yeah, A24 is just kind of starting to give up on things.
No, it's too many things.
They got too many things.
They're going to be doing that a lot this year too. It feels like
they're going to have to be strategic this year because unless Dune 2 is going to win this like all the Academy Awards next year, something else has got to come out and win some awards.
It very well might.
Speaking of, the next film we'll be discussing is Dune.
A movie I did not see.
Still dragging my feet to get to this.
In this place hides a great power that in my dreams manifests itself and warns me that a war is coming.
In Arrakis, you will not only learn how to ride the Fremen. The planet will show you what you do not see. Will show you your future. And that's just the beginning.
This world is beyond cruelty.
Do you believe in God?
Little son. He does not speak or act like a weakling. Nor did his father.
You have to be ready.
What if Paul Atreides is still alive?
This is my due. Kill them all. Show me who you are.
Deal with this prophet.
My visions are out of control. They demand that I do whatever it takes to win.
We gave them something to hope for.
That's not hope! Daddy! I am Paul Blondeev Atreides! Duke of Arrakis!
I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer.
Under the moon, the ears of God!
Andy, before we start talking about it, I just want to ask Mario real quick. Did we talk about, we talked about Dune, right?
We did. Yeah.
We did? Yeah. Did you like it? You didn't like it?
I found it boring. I think it's a really well done film, but I deeply despise the book. And I hate, is it hard science fiction? Is that what's considered?
Very fantastical science fiction.
So it's not hard science fiction.
I don't gel with that.
I find it annoying. It's just not something I care about.
I don't care about Freeman and jihad and sandworms
and spice and precincts too.
Travel to the galaxy.
I mean, I don't care about any of those things either. The first one I thought was merely like kind of like you like a good movie. Andy, what did you think of the first one?
I thought it was beautiful. I've seen it a few times now, and I think it gets better with each watch. I'm just not familiar with like kind of the lore of Dune because I never read the book. So it was hard for me to follow the first time I saw it, just with all the names and all the different locations and stuff. But the more I see it, like it's a world that he built. Like the world building here is fantastic, just visually. Mm-hmm. And then I started liking the story. The more I kind of figured out how it worked.
And by world building, you mean Villeneuve?
Yes. From what I understand, Herbert didn't even do that much of world building. This is kind of all out of the brain of Villeneuve. So
yeah, there's a I read like the first 300 pages of the book, which covers like the first part of the movie, and then like this kind of phantasmagoric spice experience that Paul has as soon as he's like in the desert, and yeah, as soon as it stops being about like castle intrigue in the book and melodrama and becomes trying to do something more psychedelic, I don't have time for it. It's all in the head. It's all this like loose, you know, stream of consciousness writing, but it's all very like broad, but it's about something very specific. I think Dune 2 takes off right where the first one left, where Paul is in the care of the Fremen and Zendaya's Chani is kind of teaching him the ropes. Rebecca Ferguson's character is pregnant with Anya Taylor-Joy, spoiler alert. although it doesn't matter. I've read too much about this already. Like I think she's only supposed to be 12. Like the next movie is supposed to take place 12 years in the future, which would make Anya Taylor-Joy.
That's Dune Messiah or whatever.
I feel like he's going to take liberties with the next one anyway.
I think so too.
So I don't think it's going to follow it straight.
But I really got into this movie.
This movie, I thought, it did come out, this was on my top five anticipated, but this movie blew me away.
By the end of the movie, I was like, this movie fucking rules. Like they kept doing stuff that was perfect. And it wasn't stuff that even mattered sometimes. Just like that shot is not the shot that they would have in any other sci-fi movie they would have used. It was really viscerally experienced. And even the people, the actors that I had question marks about, like Austin Butler.
He was awesome.
His ADR sucks, but Austin Butler on screen kicks fucking ass.
He was awesome in this.
You're not an Austin Butler guy.
I'm not, and that's the thing. So I was very dubious about like what he was going to do here. But like when he's not delivering really stupid lines of dialogue, when they give him like room to like be a character, he fucking rules.
Yeah,
yeah. Because really from watching the trailers, he gave me the impression of Eddie Redmayne from Jupiter Ascending.
Nope.
But I assume it's the opposite. I assume it's significantly better.
Yeah.
So we'll wrap this up and we'll wrap this portion up.
I do want to ask really quickly.
Yeah.
Some of the big issues that some people have had with it have been that like it's trying to cover too many story beats, and so it ends up being edited weirdly.
I read that criticism. I don't feel that way because I feel like all the actors are doing. They are moving time along pretty briskly, but yeah. They're talking a lot about like I read a lot about like though the characters like their choices aren't believable based on like the arc of the character, and I don't necessarily think that's true. Like there's a whole bunch of points where like Timothée Chalamet is just looking at Zendaya and just thinking, like just looking at her and just considering what this is going to mean. He knows what he's got to do, but he doesn't really want to do it. And that stuff is all conveyed with the acting. I think we're used to stuff being conveyed with exposition and story. And here they're not really doing that stuff.
Yeah, I agree. This movie does move. Like it does not feel like 2 hours and 45 minutes.
No.
Like when it got to the 2 hour mark, I looked at my watch for the first time. Like, holy shit, it's already 2 hours. It's very kinetic. The time jumps maybe fast, but it doesn't take you out of it. Like maybe he gets really good at riding a worm real too fast, but whatever. I don't need to watch him training how to ride a worm for a half hour. So
it's not a Rocky movie.
Yeah.
We don't need a fucking training montage for worms.
I'm actually glad how it moved along. Like it worked, and I didn't feel like some people were criticizing Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya's chemistry. I thought it worked really well for me, but I don't know.
Yeah, I thought it worked.
Own it, Andy. Be like, fuck you, people.
Well, they're doing this thing now with Timothée Chalamet. There's a shot in it where they're kissing on a dune that was very reminiscent of Bones and All.
A dune?
Yeah, a dune. Was very reminiscent of Bones and All. I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. Like that these, I mean, obviously Zendaya is not in Bones and All, but like the same thing. It was interesting.
Yeah, I'll watch it probably this weekend.
I do recommend you seeing it in person, in the theater.
I'm gonna see it. I'm gonna actually watch it virtually.
Just
have somebody go to a theater.
I'm just trying to tell you, I wouldn't wait for this to be digital because it's a spectacle. It's one of the most beautiful movies I've seen technically ever. I'm gonna go back. I want to go see it on IMAX now. I didn't see it on IMAX yet, so I want to do it again.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I think I might if I have a Friday afternoon off. Before it leaves theaters, I check it out in IMAX because nothing's going to take the IMAX spot.
No, and Civil this is making War a ton of movie. Month. That's a while. So,
gonna be Civil War is end of April. So
middle April 12th. Yeah, I think so.
April 12th.
Oh, maybe Godzilla gets XD and IMAX stuff.
Maybe.
So I'm gonna go see Godzilla versus Kong, but I'm angry.
Is that gonna be Godzilla?
Why? Minus one isn't been released on streaming. It's the fact that they can't do it with their Toho's agreement with Legendary.
Yep. In the same calendar year,
can't release a movie as an American film. So you won't see Minus One probably until next year.
Yeah,
that bullshit. I've been wanting to rewatch that movie so bad.
That box set better be fucking amazing then. If they've got a year to work on this shit, then it better be fucking titanium book.
They're not gonna spend a lot of money on it. Spend $15 million on the movie itself. They're gonna spend $5. It's gonna be just made of tin.
Yeah, they'll sell it just.
It'll be a burned DVD.
Yeah, yes. With a piece of tape on it.
Yeah.
I did not have high hopes for Dune. Not that I thought it was gonna be bad, but just I wasn't thinking it was gonna be great. And it was great.
It was great.
It was great.
I guess they brought this up at the Oscars yesterday. Everything is just so fucking long.
It is. Again, I'm telling you, this movie does not feel that long.
It doesn't. It's fine. That it doesn't feel long, right? It doesn't change the fact that it's like three and a half hours
of my day are going to be taken up by watching a movie I'm not that stoked to see.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It did not change the fact that I went to a 10:55 showing and I didn't get out until 2:35 because of trailers and Cinemark you know, commercials and shit.
Like, weirdly, the theater I went to.
Andy lucked out at his theater. Yeah,
no trailers.
What? Why?
After I don't know. I usually show up late. I just showed up 5 minutes late, and all of a sudden the movie started. I'm like, what the heck?
They should charge extra.
They should charge extra at Cinemark
for showings without
trailers. How much?
I would pay
$3 more.
$3 more
to not watch a trailer.
Or a commercial.
Cinemark's always like 25 minutes. Yeah. Like you can set a clock, a watch to it. So
you could, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can play like your commercials before the showtime. The showtime happens. You do your XD thing. You do your Cinemark Coke and popcorn movie.
Three, five minutes.
You're into the movie.
You know what's funny? And I'm going to use. I want to use the last 4 minutes of this session before we have to start a new session to talk about this. Have you ever been to a Cinemark and had someone actually get Coke and popcorn delivered to their seats during the movie?
Yes.
Yep. You
have? I've never seen it.
It's
always before the movie.
During the movie? Yeah, I've seen it like once or twice, but
yeah. It's mostly during the trailers, I guess. Yeah.
Well, why? Like this Alamo Drafthouse thing. Like you have waiters during the movie? It's a fucking 2-hour movie.
Oh, so you don't want to go into business with me and open an Alamo Drafthouse, New Haven?
I mean, if we can play the movies we want to play.
We need $13 million. I looked into it. We need liquid.
Andy, you want in?
Liquid sure. Assets.
I'll try to find it.
We'll hire Greg as the manager?
Yep, absolutely, because he's got the credentials. He knows how the shit works.
Yeah. And Memoria would be the first movie.
Absolutely. We would have a theater that wasn't showing Memoria or Occupied City.
Okay.
Go out business.
It's like a sit-in. It's like a sit-in thing.
That is an honest fact. Like New Haven. This is interesting, I'm sure, for the listeners we have. Only having one theater is a fucking nightmare now.
Which one does it have?
We have Cinemark, really.
Which is North Cinemark. Haven.
We have two Cinemarks.
Yeah.
Milford.
Well, that's what I meant. Like,
this city has to have a theater. It's garbage that it doesn't have a theater. It makes no sense.
We need an art house theater.
It's absolutely.
It's wild that the town I'm in Woodstock, Illinois, has a nice theater. So, and you guys don't even have one. So,
yeah.
Oh, they don't play indie crap. They're gonna that weird Mark Wahlberg movie is gonna go wide here, and like every screen, it's gonna be terrible.
Oh, the dog one.
Yeah.
Love Lies.
Do you get Love Lies Bleeding this weekend?
No, it's at the theater by my work though. I'm gonna go see that this week, I think.
Mm.
I'm seeing that.
I'm psyched for Love Lies Bleeding. I think the interesting thing about that movie or the reviews for that movie is that everyone says it makes no sense or that it's really funny, but that it doesn't matter because it's awesome.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for it.
Yeah, me too. Just weird Kristen Stewart movies. Let's fucking do it.
Hell yeah.
I like Katie O'Brien as well. Like she was one of the few good parts of Quantumania.
Quantumania. Who is she in Quantumania?
She's like the person who's in the quantum zone, the woman who's like the big warrior.
Oh, that movie was so terrible that I mostly forgot about it.
I don't remember that.
Did you see what won the Razzies, though?
No.
My Worst Picture?
Oh, I didn't even look. What?
Winnie the Pooh won 5.
Oh, I saw a trailer for Winnie the Pooh at this. Winnie the Pooh 2 at this one. At Dune 2.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Winnie the Pooh, the horror movie?
Yeah. It's a Fathom event.
There's already a sequel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break and we're going to let Mario ponder.
Because he's making a Peter Pan. He's making a Peter Pan or something one, but.
He is. Yeah.
Yeah. Winnie the Pooh 2. All right. We'll be right back in a second.
Somebody needs to kill this guy.
What? Don't touch it. I saw this movie once where they come across this box and they open the box.
The case.
And it was like really, really bad.
I just want to know what's going on.
I bet it's locked.
We just want to locate your friends.
Who are you, jackass?
That's when women curse like that.
those girls.
Just drove off with something we need.
We gotta call the cops.
Cool your jets. Here's what we do.
Sell it back. Shake them down.
That is about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I'm a cop.
Yeah, baby.
Jack. Who are you?
Save the sanctimony.
And hand over the million smackers.
We should see what's in here.
Drive away dolls, rated R.
What the hell?
Yeah, we forgot to tell you about the swab guy's head in the hat box.
Only theaters, February 23rd.
So the next film on our docket is the directorial debut of Ethan Coen. He's never really directed a movie before, right?
Mm-mm. Solo? I think it's his first solo, yeah.
Well, it's his first solo, but Joel Coen has been known to be the director.
I always thought they went back and forth, so I don't know. It's weird.
They kind of, I mean, one of them is credited as a director, one of them is credited as the producer. They kind of co-direct, they conceive things and they talk about things, but I don't know.
Raising Arizona, maybe.
I mean, we'll talk about that. Do the plot. That'll come up in this discussion.
Yes. So Drive Away Dolls. This is set in 1999. In Philadelphia. Pedro Pascal has a case, and then he is murdered.
He gets eye trauma again, just like from Game of Thrones. So yeah. I don't know. That's a thing he does now, I guess.
Two lesbian friends decide that they're going to go to Tallahassee.
One of them has just been planning
to go to Marion. Has been planning to go to Tallahassee for a short while.
To visit her aunt.
Your aunt. Yeah.
All right. And Jamie, laid some way by Margaret Qualley, breaks up with her girlfriend and decides to join her.
They take a car from a car drop-off thing.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Me neither.
Makes sense, I guess, because there's those fights you could take for cheap that you would get, like carry a box with you or whatever, carry something with you to drop off when you land. But they take off, journey to Tallahassee.
They discover, well, they don't discover, but
Coleman DeMingo and his lackeys are meant to pick up the car
because
in the back of the car is this case
and Pedro Pascal's severed head. And there's a long chase over the course of this 78 minute long movie. Eventually they get to Tallahassee.
They discover that the case is actually a set of dildos.
Not technically dildos. They're like wax.
They're cast. They're
still like silicone casts of various penises.
Penises. Yeah.
It's based on some woman who actually did this in the 70s.
Like Miley Cyrus. Yeah.
There was her.
And it turns out one of these penises is Matt Damon's penis.
Who's playing a U.S. senator, and he doesn't want his penis out there. So they broke a deal to exchange it for money. Meanwhile, Coleman DeMingo and his lackeys kind of catch him. And then there's some weird shootout.
Because I guess the two of them had gay sex.
And the one guy doesn't like it. And eventually they do sell.
I love your recap. This is fantastic.
Matt Damon tries to kill him.
But then Bill Gilstein, his ex-girlfriend, is there and stops them.
And then they forget the dildos at the hotel.
They do.
I'll say this before I begin.
Bill Camp has Curly.
That entire art with Curly just laying on the ground.
Will nobody care?
Nobody loves Curly or whatever.
Laugh my ass off of that. This movie's a fucking train wreck.
Terrible.
It is terrible.
I wanted to not like this movie, but I had a lot of fun. All right.
What? You're insane.
I don't care. Like, I know it's not a good movie. Margaret Qualley's like,
she's awful.
It is one of the worst performances I've seen in my life.
It was charming. There's a charm to this movie. It wasn't long, so maybe it just didn't get stuck in the craw. So
I don't know. It felt longer than Dune.
like Geraldine Viswanathan. She's good.
I thought she was really good in this. I like Bill Camp was good in it.
Bill Camp's great.
I think Matt Damon's role was really good. I would have liked seen more of him actually, but
yeah, I think they have winning actors in this movie,
and the story falls apart and everything.
But the main thrust of the movie is this relationship between these characters, and they have no relationship, and
there's no chemistry.
They're incidentally lesbians. Like, it doesn't even mean anything that they're lesbians because they just talk about it all the time and for no reason.
And that's my biggest issue with this is. Maybe I'd found this film mediocre if Bottoms hadn't come out last year, which is a movie doing very similar kind of ideas.
Yeah.
But extremely well.
It has.
Whereas this just feels. It feels written by a man, even though it's co-written by his wife, who is a lesbian. But it just doesn't feel sincere, and it's amplified that thought of insincerity is amplified by Margaret Qualley's fucking disaster of a performance.
I mean, I've been on.
I think she's usually okay.
I've been on this fence for a while. She literally torpedoed this movie. She's unwatchable. I don't even know what she's doing. I don't even know if she knows what she's doing.
I think she was trying to do a Raising Arizona thing, and it just didn't. And that's what I wanted to talk about. Like, aren't the Coen brothers better together?
That's why they're getting back together.
Yeah,
because
I mean Joel Cohen. No, I don't think so. Because Joel Cohen,
Macbeth was fine.
Tremendous movie.
No, it's not fine.
But that wasn't fun. That movie was not fun.
Them
together.
What do you think?
Yeah, no.
I know what you're saying, Andy, and I don't disagree with you. But Macbeth works, and this doesn't work at all.
I agree.
It has moments that are funny.
It has moments that are funny, but it's they're funny just because if you put some of these people on screen, giving them stuff to do, it will be funny. You know what I mean?
They can make it work. Bill Camp's.
Bill Camp can make it work. Joey Slotnick can make it work. Coleman Domingo can sell some stuff. Matt Damon can sell some stuff. But you're like, one of the biggest things about this movie, one of the reasons I know this movie is, like you said, deeply insincere, is that Matt Damon is apparently, his senator is like very infamous. You know what I mean? And he's a family values guy. You go to a fucking lesbian bar.
Your face is
just hiding out there. No one's saying anything. No one's like, hey, it's the Senator Channel who fucking hates us.
Yeah,
he's just like, you don't know anything about penises. This is special. Fuck you. Get the fuck out of here with that shit, man. Like, oh, it's a dildo drilled nail to the wall. Some people probably have that. They're just like, look at that. Look at it. See it? That's really crazy.
And that's the thing. I think it tries to do these really transgressive, subversive things. That just end up not working in the least.
Yeah,
because they're not transgressive. They're not subvert. Yeah, exactly. And like Bottoms is doing something similar, but it's like transgressive in its violence.
I mean, Bottoms is a masterpiece. I wouldn't even compare the two. But I'm just saying, I had some fun times during this movie. If it was like any longer, I would have probably hated it. So.
I almost think this movie needed some more time to read. Because I think with a better lead, like Geraldine Viswanathan is perfectly solid in her role.
And she just needed somebody to work off. That I could buy that relationship.
And
I also hated all that, like, the psychedelic transitions they were doing throughout the movie that made no sense.
Well, because if you don't have those things and you don't have the credits, you have a 60-minute movie.
It was just like, yeah, exactly. It took up a lot of time, dude. It was,
well, that's why. Because it was literally an episode of a TV show.
It was so funny. Later that day, I went to see, again, I said I was super bored and I was just like, fuck it. You said we were going to talk about it. And I was like, fuck it. I don't have anything to do. I got this movie pass from a buddy. I don't have to pay for this movie. No convenience fees. There's nobody even there. There's me and one other lady.
I was by myself. Lady, yeah.
sitting like right in the front. And I went, and then later that night, I went to see Wim Wenders' Perfect Days. And I was like, it's just one of those movie days. You know what I mean? Where you see like, and this happened with Dune too, where you see like a shitty movie and then you see a great movie. And I saw Dune 2, which was great. And then I saw Kung Fu Panda 4, which was not great, which I fell asleep during.
All right, so I don't need to go watch that one. Okay,
you good. Definitely do not need to see Kung Fu Panda 4.
I've seen exactly one Kung Fu Panda, and I'm.
I think I have too. I don't think I've seen past one.
Yeah,
so.
It's literally for children, like for children that have seen all the Kung Fu Panda movies and watched all the Netflix shows and grew up with it. Like
what
6 years.
Fuck? There's Netflix shows?
Oh yeah,
is there?
Yeah.
Huh.
That's what it's for, but it's. It's, I just find those film days kind of fascinating, where like it's on one, it's like the total opposite.
It's like a huge juxtaposition.
Well, and that we talked about this on the podcast a lot with when we did the Florida Project. Like there was The Shape of Water, and I was like, I can't even believe this movie, Florida Project. It's like, thank you, restored my faith in like the craft of cinema. I am so
Andy. Andy's a big Shape of Water guy.
I like Shape of Water a lot. Yeah,
and that's the thing. I talked to a bunch of people that year. I remember my grandmother coming up to me. This is even before we had the podcast and being like, "Have you seen The Shape of Water? I loved it." And I was like, "What? My grandmother loved The Shape of Water?" But you know, it rang some people's bells. didn't ring my bells. I'm so interested to hear this next part of this conversation. If we need to start another session so we can get through this.
We can start. Yeah.
How did this ring Mario's bell? I guess we can want to go there.
This movie is All of Us Strangers. Our next movie is All of Us Strangers.
Is this real?
Does it feel real?
Our boy's back home.
Our son. Look at you. You were just a boy. Now you're not.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't think that matters. Maybe I didn't treat
you quite as good as I should. I've always felt like a stranger in my own family. Maybe I didn't
love you. I'm always scared of something. Quite as often as I could. Always running away, do you remember?
Sorry, I never came in your room when you were crying. I never took the time. It's funny, it doesn't take much. You are always on my mind. To make you feel the way you felt. Back there again.
Do you think you'd like to be in love with him?
I'd always fall in love. This is a new feeling. You and me together into the world.
It is directed by Andrew Haig. It stars Andrew Scott is Adam, who is a lonely screenwriter living in a apartment building in London with not so many people. One of the other people that lives in that building is Paul Mescal's Harry. He knocks on his door one night drunkenly and says to Adam, like, hey, can I come in? You're queer, right? No, let's have sex. And Adam says, no, thanks. And then the next day, Adam goes on a train to his house, his old house that he lived in when he was a kid with a picture. He's writing some kind of story about this. And he knocks on the door of the house, and or no, he goes and sits in a park, and then he sees a guy And that guy leads him back to the house, and that guy is his father. And spoiler alert, his father died when he was 12. And and his mother, they died in a car accident. He grew up with his grandmother, and he's just trying to process this stuff. And while that's happening, he is developing a relationship with Harry. And there's some incidents that we can talk about. I don't necessarily think they qualify as plot points. I'm going to say... conversation about the end, I think, until we like have a conversation about it, until we like get to it in the conversation. Who wants to go first?
Go ahead, Mario.
It's difficult. I don't like this. I'm not exactly sure why. It feels oddly patronizing to kind of like the gay experience.
How so?
For me,
not that you're wrong. I'm just
that's just what I took from it. It's like this entire aspect. It's twofold. Like the first part of it is Adam's consistent self-created fear of the persecution he faces that's exemplified through Claire Foy's, like reaction to it. And then there's also that entire aspect of like the rampant drug use that is prevalent in the gay community, they say. It's kind of like reinforcing these kind of negative stereotypes. And so I think it's a masterfully done film that's carried by like three extremely solid performances. I like Jamie Bell, love Claire Foy, love Adam Scott. Paul Mescal's not doing the best work of his career.
He's the weakest one in this movie.
I just have weirdly meta film problems with it.
Sure.
And it feels like a dirtiness to me. That feels patronizing.
Mm. Andy, what do you think?
So I guess I look at I almost don't even look at this movie as like a gay movie. Like it is, obviously. But I related deeply to this movie, and I'm not gay. Just like losing parents and like how you look back on. Like I cried a lot during this movie. It's made me feel a lot because I lost my dad when I was a teenager. So kind of going through all the things that he's gone through, it really hit me hard. And just all the relationships with his parents and like how he evolved. Because he's the same age as his parents are when you see him as a ghost. And just like going through all that, I found it fascinating, especially like I thought Jamie Bell and Andrew Scott together, like the scene that they shared when he was talking about like not going into his room when he heard him crying and stuff, that hit hard. It was nice. It was cute. It was like really, I don't know. It was more. I got more out of the relationships with the parents than I did with the romance with Paul Mescal. Like I said, I like Paul Mescal, but I don't think he really brought it that well in this movie. But Andrew Scott really did. I felt every emotion that he was going through in this movie, and it was I really did like this movie, even though I can't fully explain why. It just, I don't know, it affected me, and I thought about this for weeks.
I think we're like at the interesting like crossroads, I think, because this movie really didn't work for me because of its like narrative choices, which we'll talk about in a second. But, and it's one of the things that I was reading a lot about after the film is that, like, we'll just ignore all those, like, narrative choices. The fact that he's talking to his parents, like, seemingly he's at the house and they're ghosts, but they're, like up to, he's keeping them up to date with things. Like, they can grow as people too, and, like, he's growing as people, but then he has a conversation with them, like, in a restaurant, which seems to be, like, happening in real life. Like, there's waiters and people bringing them drinks and stuff like that, so he's just talking to him. He's talking to himself, maybe? And then there's the whole end part where we find out that like Paul Mescal died on the night that Adam Scott said no, like when he knocked on his door and like he asked him if he wanted to have sex, and Adam Scott said no, he died on that night. So this relationship that's been burgeoning between the two of them is did not really happen. It is all happening in Adam Scott's mind. I want there to be a movie where with a slightly magical realist element where these two guys are having a relationship and he's also talking to his parents that are ghosts. This metaphysical bullshit that's tacked into here is fucking garbage. And I think detracts what from what should be like a really powerful movie.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with it. Personally, is like is there's a lot of extraneous things. Like there's added elements that don't necessarily be there at all. I think those moments where it's just him with his mom,
yeah,
like laying in the bed, like those moments hit.
Kills.
But
yes, yeah.
But it's also
I almost find like the relationship with Harry, like that should work as a spine, like his overall emotional issues. It shouldn't also be a monumental aspect of it.
I just, I mean,
like he's fucking crazy.
Yeah. That, yeah. Like the idea that that scene that you're talking about is tied to like a ketamine fever dream is fucking stupid.
Yeah. Like, I didn't like those parts, but there's so much to like about this movie that I almost forgive it for some of that. I don't know.
But that's the whole thing, right? Is that like it's forcing you, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's forcing you to forgive all the stuff that he put in there on purpose. Why did he put it in there?
And why is he having this mental break? We don't really ever justify why.
I feel like he's going through, it's like a healing process for him, because he's, it almost feels like Paul Mescal's character ends up dead at the end, it almost feels like he allowed himself to open up and maybe go forward and kind of get past this like road that like this roadblock he's been in his whole like life, or at least like last few decades, and maybe he can just like finally let his parents go, let allow other people to come into his life. I mean, that's sort of what I was getting out of it. I didn't like how it ended. I really didn't like it came out of kind of nowhere.
For sure, because like I think if their started relationship and it's the first time he's let himself be open with something, that would make sense.
Also,
but instead, we're saying that this weird moment where he turned down a drunk person for sex, like lit this fire?
Stranger.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, and the idea, too, that he... the idea, too, that... Oh, fuck, what was I going to say? It was tied directly to what you were talking about. But yeah, it makes... the idea that like, because they, in the conversations that he has with Harry, they have very legitimate conversations that would suggest that this relationship would help him grow, not just like in being able to like be more comfortable with his own sexuality, thus being able to have a conversation in his mind, if that's what it was, with his parents, kind of explaining it to them, which he never got to do. Because they make Harry a different generation than him. Like, they have that conversation about, like, you know, we say, you know, you say queer, and, like, all, you know, his relationship with his parents and stuff like that, and, like, how they responded to, like, the facts of his sexuality. So all that stuff is just – is in the movie. Like, you know, the idea that he can – all the necessary tools for him to grow as a person are there. So why did at the end of the movie they take them all away and make them like a figment of his imagination or something? Like, I don't know why they do that. They just like neuter like the passion of the whole thing. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And it's weird because it just ends up being there's no growth. He's in the same place.
Well, I mean, we don't know that. Dead. It's sort of like, I don't know. There's nothing
in the movie that suggests there's actual growth in terms of him being not extroverted necessarily, but like maybe he's come to terms with his parents' death, but it doesn't change where he is now.
I kind of think it does, because if you think about, like, since this character Harry was all in his head, he was having all these conversations in his own head. Maybe he was actually talking through some of his, like, hang-ups he's been going through his whole life, because that isn't a different person. That actually is him, and he made this up. It could be something to do with he is a screenwriter. He is a creative person, maybe. I don't know. I never thought about that before. But I do have conversations in my own head similar to this, trying to get through some shit. And I did relate to this character quite a bit. And it was, I don't know. Wasn't a perfect movie, but it was beautiful, and I liked a lot of it.
Yeah, it was. It had a lot to recommend, and then it had, like, all this other stuff. And I think that's when the conversations. I mean, this missed everything. I don't think it won anything. Maybe did he win a BAFTA? Did Andrew Scott?
It won a lot of BAFTAs.
It won a lot of BAFTAs. Yeah. But, like, for Oscar stuff, this was pitched as, like, a big Oscar movie, and it just, like, died on the vine.
I don't know necessarily if it died on a vine. It just didn't release.
Well, they slow rolled it out, but a lot of the other things that slow rolled out at the same time, like American Fiction, Zone of Interest, they had, like, yeah, you know, so. Campaigns behind them, and this one just kind of it couldn't get its feet under it.
I would like to see Andrew Scott get recognized for this.
It would have been cool to see Andrew Scott instead of, like, Bradley Cooper.
Yeah,
you know, or agreed. Even just, like, in a weird, like, supporting actor year, even though there was a lot of, like, supporting actors, like, and Paul Mescal wasn't very good. I'm surprised they didn't just, like, because he was nominated last year and he's become such a big star that they didn't be like, oh, you know, here's just, like, a token nomination for being famous and young.
Oh, it didn't win anything, sorry. It was nominated for Outstanding British Film. But lost to Poor Things.
It won a bunch of British Independent Film Awards.
Best Adapted. Yeah.
Best Supporting Actress.
Best Supporting Actress. Mescal got nominated for Supporting Actor.
And then Casting.
But yeah, it was definitely, like, thought provoking. Like, I definitely had, like, a bunch of conversations with my wife about it afterwards. It was, but we both kind of, like, concluded, like, and then she did a bunch of reading because she does this, where, like, the prevailing theory now is that the apartment building doesn't exist, that he's in this, like, weird, he's dead too, and he's in a, like, a weird liminal state. And I was like, if he's dead, then who fucking cares about any of this?
Also, what gives, who cares? Like, this fucking, like,
it's just Reddit
extra stuff. Yeah. It's not, if it's not on the screen or hinted at, it's a nothing burger.
Well, you haven't
read Strangers, right?
Yeah, no, I was going to ask that. Mm-hmm. Neither of us has read the book it was based on, because I wonder how different it is. I imagine it's probably quite different, because it's considered that's like a horror novel, and this is not a horror.
Well, and it's a Japanese novel, which automatically makes it make more sense if it does exactly what it does.
Comes to books. Realize. They are ghosts who are sapping his life force.
Yes,
yeah, see? All right.
What is that movie?
I would watch that movie.
Yeah.
It's like a recut this, but just put some scary music behind it every time Jamie Bell and Claire Foy talk.
Oh, he died.
Well, it actually was made into a movie.
The 80s. Book.
He just died in November.
The author? Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
He's 89.
So. You had a good run.
Good run.
But yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know.
It's a gay lead.
It's written and directed by a gay man.
But I just can't.
It just feels
patronizing.
Still to me.
I don't know why that is, but
I think it's because of all the extra stuff. It can't just be this guy having a conversation with himself and then with his lover, like, who becomes his, like, boyfriend or, like, serious, like, you know, partner. It's got to have all this metaphysical, like, stuff attached to it.
Yeah, and I think the thing too is, like, you know, Adam's supposed to be in his 40s, we assume, like Andrew Scott is, but he still feels like a child, almost.
He still feels as though he's
well, he's stunted, like, bully. That's sort of
but it's not necessarily completely stunted. It
It feels more like.
But this is where the movie's. So I'm sorry. This is where the movie's interesting though, because or an interesting in good and bad ways, because it does set, like, again, it sets up this generational divide where, because he wasn't able to be open with people like he would want to be about his sexuality when he was growing up, he missed being a part of like a culture. Whereas Harry is allowed to be a part of this culture because it's very, he grew up in a culture that was very more, or not very, accepting. More accepting of who he was as a person. All that stuff is in the movie. And I think to your point, I'm not sure why they didn't just like use that. Like, use what you gave us and stop with this, like, we turn into stars garbage. Or like, is, you know,
we turn the stars.
Like at the end of the movie, they're laying at the end of the movie, and they turn.
Right, stars.
Like, why are we doing this? Like, what is this supposed to mean? What is this? Say
I was
about
thinking
the
of the fault in our stars.
I was thinking of the Moby song "We Are All Made of Stars," which should have been playing at the end of this movie.
Well, that's actually interesting. That's
the Moby point.
Like a, this feels like a John Green adaptation in some ways. John Green or Hank Green?
The one without cancer.
John Green is the
John
one
Green.
Yeah.
Who is the Fault in Our Stars and
yes,
yeah.
Paper Towns.
Yeah, yeah. I just know them from their YouTube channels.
Yeah. Yeah. It's semi fascinating.
It feels like a young adult movie.
It's just because it's because it's so melodramatic.
Maybe.
But I think it's good. There's a place for it. I just don't think it balances tones right. It's got that melodrama in it, but it also has that weird ketamine scene in it.
I actually think if you cut that out, I'd probably like it a lot more.
Well, but do you know, I mean, so like, Andy, this is a question for both of you. Like, do you know what the how the ketamine scene works? So like, that's actually not Adam. It's not Adam having that experience. That is actually the experience that Harry was had the night he went to Adam's apartment.
I don't think you can die from a ketamine.
No, he OD'd on other stuff, or like he killed himself. But like, it's that like that experience, like where he was really lonely and kind of like was on the train and like all this other stuff because of the sweatshirt he was wearing. So there's all these garbage clues, like, oh, look at that, ha ha. But I don't want that stuff because it's in the middle of these unbelievably deep scenes. I didn't notice it either until, like, my wife read something that Andrew Haig said, like, this is what happens. So it's like a time mix-up thing.
Yeah.
And you got to hunt for the clues. And, like, but again, the question is just why?
Yeah.
Well, why in this movie about a middle-aged gay man coming to terms with the death of his parents and his sexuality? Doesn't need a weird twist.
Yeah, it just was very strange.
It's still my second favorite movie of the year so far, but it's not. It's behind Dune. Yeah,
is Driveway Dolls number three?
No, that's pretty low. My number three movies I just watched is Mean Girls the Musical.
That was okay.
It was quite delightful. I did not expect it to be as good as it was. I watched it on Saturday. And then Zone of Interest.
Occupied City is my number one.
Oh, that's my last.
I don't have a number one because it's fucking March.
It's Dune. Your number one is Dune.
It's just Dune.
All the Strangers
is my second worst of the year.
No. Occupied City is...
Then Zone of Interest. I'm an insane person.
Orion in the Dark, though. I did like that movie.
Driveway Dolls is easily the worst.
We have 5 minutes left. We kind of talked about this last time. I'm actually, and we can discuss this, I'm putting Zone of Interest, I put Zone of Interest in my 2003 list. Because it's a, for, I know we talked about it.
2023.
So I went back and like, I amended my list.
Oh.
Okay.
But you guys can leave it in. But for me, it was like part of that. It was part of that. It was part of that thing for me.
It's a 2024 movie for me. It's not going to be in the worst. It's going to be. It's going to be Oppenheimer. It's going to be in the middle. So it doesn't matter because all the strangers and Zone of Interest just won't show up anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it won't be that high on my list, so it's fine. The sound is the only thing that it would have won my sound award if I counted it for our awards.
After I watched Zone of Interest twice in like the span of like 4 days.
And yet neither of you motherfuckers have watched Society of Snow.
Nope.
Yes, you're correct.
Sorry. Because Zone of Interest, you want to see that in theaters, and it's only playing in theaters for so long. Society of Snow I can watch on Netflix whenever I want.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally won by Best Director.
I know, I'm sorry. You haven't watched All Dirt Roads Made of Salt?
That's true. Yeah.
We're even. Yeah. See, we keep ending up even.
Yeah. So, Andy.
No, but
You haven't seen Flora and Son yet? Come on.
I did see Flora and Son.
No, Mario.
That's true.
I did a lot of.
Was that in your top 10?
It won a bunch of my music ones. It was in my top 15, I think.
No, I just did a lot of reflection after seeing Zone of Interest, and it like just felt it was part of that experience of seeing like those movies for that year, and it just made a lot of sense to me. It was the movie that I had been waiting to see to round out like my list. I felt very weird about my list because I hadn't seen Zone of Interest.
I agree, I did too,
and it made me feel much better. I could let my list go, which I was really struggling with.
I was happy too because it. Just solidified the fact that
it wouldn't have made my top 10. It would have won my sound award. So
it would have got nominated, but that's about it. Would have been like five.
Why do you hate Billie Eilish so much?
I don't hate Billie Eilish.
You seem really angry at her last night. She's gonna have a big ego on her pretty soon.
I think he hates.
Well, Phineas, no, I was saying they're going to have a big ego. I think Phineas is going to be the one that's going to have a huge ego. He's going to shut her down. It's like, bitch.
He didn't say that.
Jesus. No. I'm saying Phineas, bitch.
But he doesn't.
She's a star.
But she knows. I think that the relationship seems really grounded. They seem like both really grounded individuals.
He doesn't seem grounded. I thought you hated her.
I don't like her music, but she seems like a fun hang.
I like her music, and I think she seems cool. So
yeah, especially since she came out, she seems like so relaxed. Everything she does is so fun. Like that's not singing songs. I still hate her music.
Really?
I like her music. I mean, I like some of her music. I thought what was I made for? As I listened to it more, it was boring.
I'm just Ken
should have won.
Yeah,
it should have won. Yeah,
it was sad.
I mean, it was the best performance. It was the best thing at the Oscars. So.
No, it was Godzilla Minus One.
No, it was Gosling's performance.
Godzilla Minus One. If Ryan Gosling is in Godzilla Minus One, doing I'm Just Ken.
Dan Stevens is in Godzilla X Kong.
He is. Adam Wingard's got him up.
He's also flying a TIE fighter for some reason. Technology has really developed since the end of the last Godzilla movie, American Godzilla movie. Now they have TIE fighters. And portals into the fucking Hollow Earth.
Hollow Earth, yeah.
Yeah.
God. It's gonna be bad.
But maybe fun. For sure. All right.
I think it'll be fun.
We'll see you guys soon. Watch movies.
Drink a beer. Watch a movie.
By the next time we talk, I'll be drinking again.
Yeah, because your stomach won't be exploding.
I won't be on antibiotics, which they say very specifically, don't drink.
So, good idea.
All right, take it easy, guys.
Great seeing you guys.
Bye, Andy.
Do it again. Bye.
Bye.